If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Love is the Key to Transformation, Ascension, and a Positive Future. Love is the key to transformation, ascension, and a positive future. And I think we all want that. Or you probably wouldn't be listening to me right now. So if you're ready, bring yourself forward, here and now, take a deep breath, and allow yourself to be centered in that core essence, which, when everything else falls away, remains. That is who you are. Pure, divine love, uniquely spoken into this quantum universe. So that although love is one, each one of us has a very unique soul signature of that particular loving essence. If you hang out in the silence and begin to probe inside your energetic matrix of consciousness and sentiency and awareness, you will find there is a core essence that is so fiery that when you touch into it, you start to tremble. Your entire being, especially your head, is flooded with goose pimples. You feel a fire course through your nervous system. You feel a smoldering love welling up within you that consumes your entire being. And if you could see yourself in that state, you would look like a violet flame. Why violet? Because that is the energy of transformation, transmutation, and transfiguration. And that violet flame purifies space. It transmutes every single molecule of negativity, of anti-love, anti-life, of the gray shrouds of doubt and fear. It consumes it like a flame consumes a spider web. And you feel expanded. You have a sense of beingness that I like to sometimes refer to as a witnessing presence that's everywhere. A witnessing presence. Eyes in the sky, if you will. But it's beyond body confinement. It's beyond the gerbil cage of your customary belief systems and thoughts. It's beyond the emotions that attachment to the material world and its folderol engenders. It's beyond all of that. Because all of those things will fall away. But you take your fiery heart, your fiery aura, your omnipresent expanded consciousness, your signature energetically of love and light and divine sound, that you take with you for eternity. Every thought born of that state is ineradicable, which means it goes forth throughout the infinity and keeps resounding because it's in consonance with truth, which must be in perfect heart coherency. Otherwise, there's no truth. Truth and heart coherency are one. Truth and life and heart coherency and reality and who you truly are eternally are one and the same. And they're divine and immortal now. So what is it that is being transformed, that needs to ascend, that needs to co-participate in co-creating a positive future? Well, let's say they're the molecules that you, as a flaming essence of divinity, are commingling with within the densities confined in time, energy, space, and matter. These are densified illusion fields that, as flaming spirits, we have dumbed down and dimmed down and descended down into to homogenize them with our flaming essence and thus to transcend and descend them back to pure divine resonance and harmony. So it's part of the cycle in the matter universes, the Pinda universes, the Anda and the Pinda, which would be the material and the astral universes that are under the law of polarity and duality. It's in those cycles of involution, where spirit descends into matter, and evolution, where matter is commingled with spirit and returns back beyond duality. So it's the meeting of eternity with the temporal, infinity with time. And that is what we call the Christ action, the Christ redemptive action. Because in that function, every one of us, as an individualized spirit, is part of that Christ action, ministering into time-space. So in that, we become the only begotten. We become the beloved. We become the one in that process of crucifixion on the cross of time-space and the resurrection back to pure light, the pure living word and living light through the key, which is the living love. So that is why we, as spirits, are full spectrum analyzers. That's how I like to language it. In that we are the only species, at least in this universe, I don't know about the others, well, let's say this solar system, let's just bring it down more into the local neighborhood here, We are the only species that can embody, express, and marriage with any state of consciousness, from the very, very lowest energy, which we would call the subhuman or the demonic, all the way up to the most brilliant God-realized state, and everything in between. That is the value of a human incarnation. We can't do that elsewhere, so far as I know. I'm sure we're not a one of, because there's probably variations of this theme on other planets. But I got my impression primarily from what Sai Baba said. And he said that human life on planet Earth is unique, that there's no place else in all of creation that has human or a similar life form. Now, that for me bore a lot of investigation, because I come quite consciously from the planet Venus, and we're quite humanoid. And I've met a few beings from other planets, and they look like anybody else walking down the street. So what I came to understand by his statement is not the human form, which on other planets is referred to simply as man with a capital M, but he's referring to that peculiar mixture that we have here on this planet of ego mind and divine mind. Apparently, that is somewhat of an anomaly. And the value of having an ego, a false self, is that it gives soul a totally different perspective and experience of itself in life. I mean, think of it. If you are the all that is, and you embody as the all that is, as the many, surely it's for the purpose of experiencing yourself in differentiation, in difference, in diversity, and in having the potential of being in an experience of absolute debasity and evil, if you so choose, or absolute divinity and exaltation, if you so choose. It gives a very different perspective, doesn't it, about the vagaries of life. I remember one time I had a dream. I was taking one of our Peace Theological Seminary classes on the three selves. And this was many years ago. Gosh, it must have been in the mid-70s. And I had a dream in which I was fleeing from somebody. I couldn't see because I was running from it too fast. I'm sure most of you have had that dream. It was chasing me, and I was running, and I ran into a room, and it had several doors, and I was very busy running to each door and locking it. I got to the last door, and as I was locking it, I thought, wait a cotton pick a minute, let me just stop and see who that is. I'm tired of being chased and running. So I opened the door, and here was a rather, it was myself in another form. It was me. And this woman said, well, I only wanted your love. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I actually came into an earth incarnation to experience a false self. And she was the embodiment of my false self. And I had denied it. I hadn't given it love. But if you stop to think about it, you come from the highest divine realms down into a human deep diving suit, if you will, this body, for the experience of having duality, differentiation, difference, of having the free will to make poor choices and to suffer the consequences. to have good days and bad days, to have lifetimes when you're really a scumball and lifetimes when you're really a saint. And it goes back and forth. You know, they can follow one upon the other. So, to the soul, all experience produces something that is worthwhile and useful and is grist for the mill. And that dream gave me a whole different level of compassion for that shadow or false self or negative self, whatever you want to call that part of us, of each one of us that we tend to disown. And I think that is the thing that chases most of us and takes, you know, different forms. But I think that's really the bottom line. We're to love it all. We're to accept and love it all. And once we do that within our own selves, then we can do it towards others. Because if you don't have your own self-approval, it's very hard to be approving of others. So anyway, I wanted to share that. I think I was headed into a meditation, but I got on fire with the heart. And I find with myself that even on a day when I wake up and I feel very mundane and very grounded, that smoldering intensity of my heart is just under the surface. And it can unpredictably erupt in ecstasy at any moment. At any moment. Sometimes when I think I'm just really, you know, in a everyday mundane kind of state of consciousness, something will ignite that below the surface, just slightly below the surface, passion I have, which I could only describe as an intense love of humanity, intense love. And it's because I see the God in people. And I love God. And when that heart is ignited, you live in heaven now. You've made that shift now. And that state, that fiery-hearted state, as I shared in a recent seminar, is very catching. I caught it from many, many years of being with Satya Sai Baba and my great teacher, John Roger, both of whom have tremendous universal fiery-heartedness that loves every atom of existence as its own self. Now, the way to get into that place, that state, well, you can do it several ways. I did a combo. You can meditate. But you know what? If meditation isn't followed by service, you don't activate the fiery heart. And if the service isn't motivated by devotion, it's kind of pointless because your heart isn't in it. And your heart won't be in it unless you have devotion. And you won't have devotion unless you've had at least some measure of contact with your true essence, your soul. You are soul, having a human experience, but most people identify with the human experience rather than the soul. So when I speak of your soul, that's really not accurate. You are soul. You've always been soul. You are love. You don't have a shadow. That's the, what would we call it? That's That's the game scenario, the game interactive, the video game you're playing with this life that you think you're living in duality. But you got the remote control in your hand and you've never left the heart of God. So you're working the remote to your little puppet personality in time-space. And the game plan is such that you can't enforce yourself as a spirit on your personality until your personality has gotten to the point it's really sick and tired of being sick and tired, and it calls for help. So even as a spirit looking down and remote controlling your little puppet personality in time and space, you can't inflict your consciousness upon an unwilling ego personality. You have to wait until at some point it gives you some wiggle room. But the minute it opens up, then you have a way to contact your personality in time-space. And the whole purpose is to marry the two of you so that the lower self actually is transmuted and ascends up into that higher consciousness, which allows the fullness of your light to simply shine away all of the shadows. It's not that you kill the ego or you destroy the ego or you do anything with the ego. You just leave the ego be the ego and you ignore it. You let it do its thing. Because it will ultimately dissolve in the light that you are. So you don't have to put any attention on that. You just observe it. That's where the witnessing awareness just watches with good humor and a lot of laughter the silly shenanigans of the little self-important ego, little grasping, needy, whimpering, complaining ego. And you love it all. And you let it do what egos do, which is create drama. So anyway, love is the key to transformation and ascension and a positive future. And as I often speak of, it's one state of consciousness, one spiritual condition of heart that determines one state and condition in this life as well as in the life beyond in the higher dimensions. When your body wears out, or you decide, and it's allowed by God, to drop the physical form, you move into the next dimension. You have a form appropriate at that dimension, and you keep on with your life. No one ceases to exist. No one dies. Impossible to die. The Bible says that death is the last and final illusion that we finally awaken to. There is no death. And that's why when you practice the sound current meditation, where you do soul travel, and you train yourself to move in your spiritual inner awareness beyond the mind, beyond the body, and travel, or that is to say, expand your awareness as soul, in the witnessing presence. When you expand into witnessing presence, that's also another way of describing soul travel or soul transcendence. You change your point of view from being in a body, identified with a body, to identifying with being spacious awareness itself that is quite omnipresent. And that shift enables you to do what Paul described in the scriptures when he said, I die daily. You die to the things of this world and awareness of the things of this world and move your spiritual inner awareness to that transcendental state of expanded beingness. And when you can live from that state, you don't create additional karma, because you live in spacious love. And the love is simply your default setting in any exchange with anything at any place on any level. You become harmless, truly harmless, so that everything that comes from you is life-bestowing, life-enhancing, life-evoking, life-perpetrating, life-edifying. Everything promotes life, and thus you become a co-creator, a co-creative spirit with Divine Source. So, what I would suggest as something very important is to begin to take conscious dominion from your spirit, your heart, each morning when you wake up. Let the first words that come out of your mouth be related to God. You can say, "Good morning, God, here I am," whatever, doesn't matter. But consecrate your day to the Beloved. And specifically commit yourself and your energies at the beginning of each day. The Course in Miracles says that if we state the kind of day that we want in the beginning, and we make no decisions on our own, that is to say, out of our ego mind, but we make them in harmony with our spirit, then that is the kind of day that we will have. For example, let's say you'd like a day in which you feel at peace and you feel happy all day long. Well, then you'd have a choice if something comes up during the day that would not be... Let's say, coming into agreement with peace. Let's say you find yourself with a person who's irate and in a bad mood, wants to argue. If you listen to the spirit at that moment and ask yourself, "Well, would I rather be happy and at peace, or would I rather engage in this person's grievance, whatever?" And since you've chosen to have a day of perfect happiness and peace, you would choose then to find some way to exit that arena. You just wouldn't lend any agreement or energy to that energetic of dissension. And see, that's how you would choose the spirit. You'll notice when you're in a situation like that, you always have a split second where you make a decision. And you decide either with Christ or the ego. If you decide with Christ, you exercise love. If you decide with the ego, you exercise vengeance. Just that simple. One will give you a sense of peace, and of course that's aligning with the Beloved. And in the evening, when you finish your day, do a little mental inventory and ask yourself, what was the most enjoyable moment or moments that I had today? And then express your gratitude for some of the things that showed up that, for example, were enjoyable or that blessed you in some way. And then set your intention for what you're going to do when you exit your body. Because your spirit isn't going to hang around a sleeping body. It's going to go out and do what it does. 9 times out of 10, if you're an initiated disciple and a conscious light worker, you're going to go forth to be of service in some way that would be for the highest good. And if you're an ordinary person that has a lot of karma, then you go into the appropriate realm where you have that karma. And if you're under the tutorship of a master, you would be given the opportunity to work some of that karma out on the inner planes, so you don't have to go through it necessarily in the physical. That's where we can learn and work out a lot of things that then become unnecessary to have to encounter in the physical dimension. This is one of the ways that the spiritual travelers work with us. And it's a great blessing because you can do a lot of warding off unnecessary evils by allowing the karma to be worked out with the master's assistance on the inner planes. So I found out with myself, because I'm sharing things that I do every day, at least most days. Sometimes you forget. But generally, this is the way I start and end my days. I found out some time ago that my happiest moments are when I'm serving somebody, doing something for someone. Sometimes my happiest moment is writing an encouraging email or posting an encouraging something on Facebook or doing an encouraging tweet or doing an encouraging article. I like to encourage people in the spirit. I like to give them strength in their spirit, in their faith, in the goodness of themselves and life and other people. So those are the areas that I focus attention on. And I notice when I do, those are my happiest, most enjoyable moments of the whole day. So let me ask you, in your observing of your little puppet in time and space, as you bring your awareness up to where you can look down on your life, your expression, to what do you lend your time and your energy and your attention? What do you lend your time, energy, and attention to most often? If you don't know, then take a day and get a little tablet and begin to keep track of where you went with your consciousness, your mind, your thoughts, your attention, your conversation, what you did physically. Begin to look at where you're investing your life. Because each one of us is allotted the same 24 hours, and each of us has been allotted only a limited number of days, a certain cycle of time to experience and learn in this physical dimension. And that applies if you've lived only a few days or over 100. Each soul comes in to experience life at a preset span, in a preset span. And that's why no one dies before their time, and no one dies without God's or the Master's permission. Most people that have tried to commit suicide, for example, are very often met and sent back by someone saying, no, it's not your time. You still have work to do. Or if you're very ill and it looks like you've passed away, or you're in a coma, and you're met by someone that says, no, it's not your time. You have to go back. So it's important to accept that as just the way life is divinely apportioned and ordered and governed. So it would be good if we could utilize on a conscious level every minute, every second, in the most spiritually productive ways we possibly could. How would that be? Well, primarily by giving, by serving, by seeing how we can enhance the happiness and quality of life of someone else. You know, if you want to be happy, then try to make someone else happy. That's the surest way to generate your own happiness, is to see what you can do to brighten the spirits of another. And to inquire within yourself, to find that divine fiery essence, that divine love. Because as you're in touch with that within, then you tend to experience and see that and experience that without. It's always, you find it first within, and then it's experienced without. Did you know that that's true even in terms of our material inventions? For example, in the Atlantean root race, the body that was being attuned to was the astral body, which is represented by the water element. So during that age, mankind began to explore navigation. And so when we conquered the seas, it meant that the majority of humanity at that time was beginning to master their emotional nature, their astral body. And now we are in the process of learning to master and positively direct our mental bodies. So we are in the process of mastering the air, because air is the quality that governs the mind. So isn't that interesting? As within, so without. As above, so below. It's a spiritual law in the lower dimensions of duality. So with regard to energy, just consider the tremendous amount of energy that's wasted by indulging in negative emotions like anger, hatred, gossip, envy, jealousy, all that stuff. And if this precious energy were redirected into positive emotions like love and service and compassion and devotion, gratitude, we would gain both inner and outer peace. And then we would begin to experience the divinity inherent in all creation. To tell you a truth, that when you find that inner peace and love within yourself, that inner divinity, I can absolutely promise and guarantee that's what you're going to notice most predominantly in others and around you. So pay attention to what you're making a big deal out of, what you're noticing. It lets you know what you're noticing from, which is always your own inner state. So let me share what Sai Baba has to say about love. Love is the key. Through service to those in need, including animals and other life forms, one spontaneously begins to experience love. One of the best ways to further inspire this love or devotion is to direct it toward the Lord that resides within the heart of all and throughout all of creation. Love is the easiest way to win God's grace and to realize that divinity pervades everything. In fact, God is in and as everything. Love should not be rationed on the basis of caste or creed or economic status or intellectual attainment. Love is all-embracing. It cannot be confined to one person and denied to another. It is a current that flows through all. Love is expansion. Hatred is contraction and death. This is the basic teaching of the ancient wisdom the Sanatana Dharma. A heart saturated with love of God can never entertain thoughts of violence. It is sheer hypocrisy to kneel before God and then force men to kneel before you. God is love. God is peace. God is strength. A tree is judged by its fruits. Leaders of people have to develop this universal feeling of love, not limited to political boundaries. Love is the key to open the doors locked by egoism and greed. Love is the very nature of life. The principle of love has no trace of ego and blemish. Love lives by giving and forgiving. Ego lives by getting and forgetting. Love removes selfishness and expands consciousness through sympathy and compassion. It is the fruit of life. Fill your heart with selfless love. Love is the essence of worship. It is the very form of God. God is love divine. Only through love can faith become steady. Only through faith can knowledge be gained. Only through knowledge can complete devotion and self-surrender be ensured. And only through self-surrender can the Lord be realized. Love the Lord's creation as much as the Lord himself. Then the tree of life will yield the sweet fruit of Madhura Bhakti, which is absolute, unalloyed, pure devotion. He has such an absolutely beautiful way of addressing these things. This is another statement from Baba that I wanted us to look at very specifically. Love as thought is truth. How many of us have ever thought of that? Love as thought is truth. Now, since we have thousands of thoughts that go through our mind all the time, how do we tell when we are in alignment with truth as love or not? When you're in the mind, and I think Eckhart Tolle is probably, his books and his teachings are probably really, really good to discern the difference between when you're in that ego mind and when you're simply in that pure, spacious awareness. Because when you're in ego mode, the ego is constantly running evaluative commentary on everyone and everything. It never shuts up. It yaks on and on and on. But it's never about love. It's always about comparison, evaluation, and commentary. Whereas, if you're in the state of love, when you're in that thought, which is truth, you're in that witnessing awareness. When you're in witnessing awareness, using thought as love expressed as truth, you only witness the good and the divine in all persons and things. It's that state of just being present with love and without commentary. Then he says, love is action, is right action. How would we know the difference? We all know when we're doing something that's right action because we feel clear and right about it. Our conscience is quiet when we're engaging in right action. And every single one of us knows when we're doing something wrong because the conscience doesn't sit still and isn't quiet within us. It, you know, nags us. We feel guilty. We feel like, oh, wow, shouldn't be doing this. This is the wrong thing to do. So a good way to gauge your actions and make sure they're in alignment with love is to ask yourself, what is the most loving thing I can do right now? What's the most loving thing I can do? Or what would love do now? And then Baba describes love as the feeling is peace. So when you're in a state of peace, that's allowing your emotional feelings, your emotional nature, to manifest love. And that's so true. I mean, every time you feel clear and at peace, I mean, observe yourself. It's always because you're in a state of love. Always. It's immediate peace. And then love as understanding is nonviolence. I think if we could understand the pain that every person is bearing, the brokenheartedness that everyone carries, particularly the people that are the most angry and vengeful and hateful and tormented, that all comes out of a great place of woundedness and pain. So when we understand that, how could we possibly react violently towards a person that's suffering? Certainly not the true self, the ego, yeah, sure. but the true self would never, ever be violent towards someone who is suffering. So again, love as thought is truth. Love as action is right action. Love as feeling is peace. Love as understanding is nonviolence. And so we come into this dimension to have all that is not pure love pressed, squeezed, and extracted from us, leaving only the pure divine sweet nectar of immortality. The nectar of immortality, amritam, is nothing else but that pure divine love that we are. And that we take with us, and only that, into and throughout eternity. Now, in terms of what plays out next, individually and collectively, on this planet, we are in a very decisive moment. And there are basically two scenarios that are showing up within the individual and collective subconscious. And bear in mind, what is in the subconscious is what is coming out on the world stage. And individual and collective subconscious, what arises from the individual and collective subconscious is the previous karma or conditioning that is coming up to be resolved in some matter. That explains everything that's going on in the outer world, whether we're looking at a person or we're looking at the world as a whole. So there are two scenarios primarily that we're seeing. The first one is a scenario of global warfare and destruction. The doomsday, extinction, Armageddon, post-human scenarios. And you see a lot of that going on in the televisions today. You know, they're just running constant programs on these things. So you see a lot of people are buying into that as what's going to happen. But the second one is one of global transformation. The new earth, paradigm shift, spiritual awakening, ascension, transformation scenarios. And although there's some minor variations, really these are the two main belief systems or scenarios that seem to be occupying people's reality constructs. And you'll notice that most prophetic messages tend to fall into one of these two viewpoints. If you study world mythology, religious scriptures, and parables, these two themes are again endemic in every world culture in some form. So I think it may have to do with one's karmic predisposition to be more in touch with the past and what has occurred before. For example, if you're in that first category where you foresee doom and gloom, very often that's a imprint, a karmic imprint, a samskara, if you will, from having experienced the prior destruction of Lemuria and Atlantis, for example, or maybe Nibiru or Maldek, you know, in the cosmos, or maybe one of the wars on Mars. You brought that in from some place which causes you to see the future in terms of what had been experienced before. Or if you're like myself, one who has come back in time from the future, and thus from a more positive visionary perspective, for example, most starseed, we have come back in time from the future. And as starseed have most recently come to Earth from one of the more spiritually evolved planetary civilizations. That's why we're the visionaries and the futurists and the people who are really positive about where we're going to be headed, because we've read the last chapter in the book and we see how it all ends. So I would call such people the true way showers and visionaries of today. And a major characteristic of these visionaries back in time from the future is their constant and consistent envisioning of a loving and peaceful future for everyone. I stress everyone. And not just an elect few. Very few of us can countenance the idea that it's only a few that are going to have all the good stuff and the rest of people are going to burn in hell for eternity. We just can't embrace that. You know, if it isn't for everyone, we actually don't want it. And neither does Christ, because Christ came for everyone. So another characteristic is that these people who've come back in time for the from the future are peaceful within themselves, as if they alone knew for certain the outcome to which we are collectively headed. Another is that they refrain from polarizing stances and discussions. You won't find them getting into the argumentative mood. They're just not interested in that. They seem to lead by example in living from the unified heart. These visionary futurists are for peace and universal brotherhood rather than against anyone or anything. They are noticed more by, I think, what they are not involved in than what they're actually doing, which tends to be rather quiet. They work behind the scenes without a lot of need for recognition or fanfare or notice or anything, but they're always consistently working for the collective good. Truly, we could say that such star-seeded emissaries are the true global benefactors, the genuine spiritual movers and shakers, those who live in heart-based intercession on behalf of us all. I suppose we could give some examples here. Let me think a minute. Well, for one, my teacher, John Roger. When I first met him, I said to myself, wow, that is the very first true Christian I have ever met. And then I realized, wow, He has the Christ consciousness. And John Morton, his successor, is another one, consistently giving blessings of peace with a tremendous sense of goodwill towards everyone. His wonderful wife, Lee Taylor Young, is another one, just a radiant expression of peace and joy and love. James Toyman would be another one. Thich Nhat Hanh would be another. Eckhart Tolle, Mother Teresa, Louise Hay, Peace Pilgrim, Martin Luther King. I mean, you know, just to mention a very few that pop into my mind at the moment. I didn't mention Sai Baba because he's in another line of expression altogether as an avatar, divine incarnation. So I think it's important to realize that we need to be for what we want to have more of in our world and to devote our energy to fortifying, supporting, and increasing that in our personal life, and then it becomes our collective as we form a great collective of awakening starseed and emissaries sent here to bring transformation, ascension, the paradigm shift, and a world that works for everyone, governed by love and universal kinship and goodwill. So that's where I'm putting my energy. And I'm sure if you've listened to me this long, you probably have made that choice too. So let's fill our heart each day with a fire of divine love. Let's resolve to be of service in everything we say, think, and do. And let's be happy and at peace. And by that example, give encouragement and hope to everyone we interact with. And let's go out chanting, Anai Hu. Deep breath. Anai Hu. Baruch Hashem Adonai. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Adonai.